If you were to summarize this generative AI, what's different about all the machine learning algorithms that have come before it and other artificial intelligence, other algorithms that come before it, was the learning that if we just threw massive amounts of data at it, we could get a step level increase in what we could get out of it, what it could do for us.
That's incredible.
You're listening to Cary Lutz's Financial Survival Network, where you get valuable information you just can't find anywhere else. To thrive in today's trying times, you need the Financial Survival Network now more than ever. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and get your free newsletter and gift. Financial Survival Network, now more than ever.
And welcome. You are listening to and watching the Financial Survival Network. I'm your host, Cary Lutz. Well, we're midway through April. Things are very murky looking out there. And maybe you need a different approach towards the market. What with AI and all the technology going on now, how is that affecting the way you invest, the way you look at investing, the way you screen potential investments? Well, David Merritt is here with us now. David, you were kind of a groundbreaker disruptor here in the financial sector, one of the original quants, using quantum analysis to allocate capital, and you kind of become kind of a legend in this area, and we're thrilled to have you on. We don't really usually get somebody who's really into the technical weeds and able to handle, you know, huge volumes of data and actually draw conclusions from it. So we're thrilled to have you on. And my first question for you is, AI got to be making an impact in your field now, not just in the amount of data you can handle and analyze, but in the conclusions that you draw from that analysis. Can you briefly tell us what AI is, what kind of havoc it's wreaking in your field?
Yeah, sure, Cary, and I'm delighted to be with you today. So sure, AI is having a big impact. For quantitative investors like us, we're used to dealing with lots of numbers. But I think even for us, AI is really a huge step level advance. So I'll let me explain that a little bit. So, what we try to do as quantitative investors is really accomplish two things. One is to have a high market awareness, right? We want to consume as much data as possible, as much relevant data as possible, tease out what is relevant and isn't relevant sort of from the noise. It is one part of it. So have broad market awareness, not look at a small subset of numbers and kind of be biased by that. The second thing we try to do is we try to invest in a very systematic way, right? Have a very repeatable investment process so that no surprises or deviations come up in the way we make decisions, right? And then when we think about how AI is affecting that, I think of it affecting in two ways. In terms of the actual way we invest, all of a sudden now we have this thing called generative AI, which means we can actually not just predict, which we've been able to do for a long period of time. I started my first artificial intelligence company back in 1999 and in the internet search engine space, but that's essentially machine learning algorithms and doing prediction. But what generative AI allows us to do is to ask questions and have the machine go off into that all of that deep data and leverage the learning it can extract from us and come back with answers, right? And that's the new thing here is how easy it is to get not perfect, as you mentioned, but high quality answers from even larger amounts of data than we could have imagined a year ago. That allows us to, for example, say, you know, what do you think of the most recent conference call for General Electric, you know, or what have you, these kinds of questions. And then the other way it's affecting our business, these are two different branches, of course, but is, you know, obviously we're investing in the AI revolution as well.
Okay. So have you been surprised by the answers you're getting back and how quickly this AI, I put in quotes, revolution, but it truly is a revolution, how quick it's going, how profound the changes are?
So I think we were really, you know, when ChatGPT came out, you know, we were all shocked at how quickly we could get good answers to all kinds of general questions. That just shocked everybody in the world. But the interesting story, I think, on that is, and I've just come back from the NVIDIA GTC conference a few weeks ago, but and you know, listening to tech industry people kind of talk about their own surprise was, you know, it's long been thought that if you put less information into a model, but it was higher quality information, you'd get a better answer. And a few years ago, some data scientists got thinking, well, what if we just did a crazy thing and just threw the whole kit and caboodle at it? Let's just throw every piece of information that's ever been on the internet, you know, kind of in air quotes here, but pretty close to it, you know, at it and see if the model gets better. Now, in order to even test that, you've got to have billions of dollars of chips, right? Which, you know, so it took some time. But anyway, they did it. And what they found was, much to their surprise, not only did the models get better, they got way better.
Wow.
And so that's the core of the revolution, if you will. If you were to summarize this generative AI, what's different about all the machine learning algorithms that have come before it and other artificial intelligence, other algorithms that come before it, was the learning that if we just threw massive amounts of data at it, we could get a step level increase in what we could get out of it, what it could do for us.
That's incredible. And yeah, so things that, so that got to change your view on things a bit, because things that you think are trivial, I think are trivial, not important, the AI looks at them, in a different way. And, you know, it's like the butterfly effect, right? Or you throw a pebble in a stream, and in 1,000 years, that pebble will have diverted the stream as water, you know, flows to the point of least resistance. It's kind of like that kind of awakening here, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It is. It's exactly that. And it's a good analogy. But to compare human beings, of course, like let's compare it to human beings for a second. Human beings, of course, I never read the entire internet, right? If I spend my entire life 24 hours a day, never sleeping, never eating, just reading, I would never get through the internet, right? But yet, and the same for everyone. But yet, we can be really smart about a lot of things, right? We can learn history, we can learn mathematics, we can learn physics, we can do complex reasoning, right? We can do all these things, and we don't even need to read all of the internet. So just to put, I put that out there just to say the machines are still pretty stupid in the sense that they need to read the entire internet just to be able to, you know, write English, you know, so to speak. They're not as smart as we are in that sense, right? Our ability to reason off of take small amounts of information and use that very efficiently to do amazing things, that's still the domain of human beings. You know, obviously, you know, technology advances quickly. You know, we should expect AI very roughly, as an automation tool, that its productivity should roughly double every 2 years because it's on Moore's law, right? So roughly double every 2 years would be the kind of long term. And so if you think it gets doubly smart every 2 years, it can, you know, that can move along quite quickly. So we'll see where the future is. But today, yeah, it consumes huge amounts of information. It needs to consume huge amounts of information, but it can make use of it.
Okay. So what about the efficiency of it? You know, basically, I think in another 5-6 years, most of a large portion of our electrical infrastructure is going to be going to running NVIDIA processors and other AI processors. Is that a sustainable model?
So, yeah, of course, the answer to that is no. And because when you look at the numbers, you know, I think data centers today, and don't quote me on this, but I think data centers today are 2% of U.S. electricity consumption, and over I think the next decade, it's supposed to, data centers are supposed to go to 4%. I think something like that. It's, in other words, doubling in a very short period of time. Mm-hmm. These chips require huge amounts of energy. In fact, some of the bigger data centers that are being planned thinking you're going to have to build a small nuclear reactor next to them, right? So you're not just building a data center anymore. You're building the electricity to power it as well at the same time, right? So small mini nuclear reactors huge amounts of wind farms or solar cells. So it's probably not sustainable. No, I mean, again, you know, we have to, if AI is going to progress along Moore's law, it's going to do so in part by the way the chip industry has done to date, which is, you know, every iteration of chips lowers the wattage consumption per unit of work. So just for example, the Hopper chip, which is the NVIDIA's current chip, which is currently powering the AI revolution, is being replaced by the Blackwell chip. That's what Jensen introduced in his keynote. And the Blackwell chip, when you put it all together and you just finalize all the numbers, it's about 25-30% more efficient than the previous generation. Those gains will have to continue to happen, because otherwise the energy numbers just will constrain what AI can do in the future.
Okay. All right. So as far as your profits, your fund's profits go, and you've kind of been doing AI before it was called AI, right? But it's reached a point now where it's in everybody's awareness on the planet. Are your competitors going to be able to catch up? Is it going to rationalize your business to the point where everybody's got the same tools and they're able to basically replicate your outcomes?
So, let me draw an analogy. The short answer is no. I think, I think it becomes more difficult for discretionary managers overall, and it becomes easier for systematic managers, right? Some sort of quant data based investment type of managing versus discretionary. I think it's the bigger trend. But I think about when data. We had the data revolution, right? The last 20 years have been about, you mentioned it earlier, big data, more availability of data, cheaper data sets, more variety of data sets. All this stuff has been going on now for a while. And I remember the arguments early in the day. Well, now data is a commodity, so you can't make any money off of data anymore. And it's clearly not true. There are clearly people who can find things in data and people who can't. In fact, it lent itself. The big data revolution didn't commoditize data at all. Maybe from a purchasing point of view, right? The data sets got cheaper, but it didn't commoditize it in terms of the use cases and what we can get out of it. Because it turns out the more data you have, the more smartly you have to look for the needle in the haystack, because the haystack got bigger, right? So I don't think so. It's always possible. What you laid out, but I think. Finance is such a complex business. It's always increasing in complexity. There are more and more ways to trade. There are more vehicles to trade through. Information gets processed quicker than it used to before. I think it's more about staying on top of these changes. First the data revolution, now machine learning, then machine learning, now artificial intelligence. It's about staying on top of these so you can stay at the top of the game.
So here's a question, a little afield, but with your knowledge, I think you'll know the answer. For high frequency trading outfits like Citadel, is AI going to give them yet another leg up on the general market?
So that's interesting. I'm not a high frequency trader, so I'm not going to be able to answer that directly. Maybe somebody who is a high frequency trader, but I did note that last week, Citadel announced that. They were partnering, I believe it was with Microsoft, and they were moving a bunch of their in-house data processing onto the Azure cloud. It was either Google's cloud or Azure cloud. But anyway, forget which cloud it is. They were moving on to somebody's third-party cloud. That's a huge thing. I mean, today, out of out of security considerations and also out of just proprietary technology considerations, people in the finance business do all of this stuff internally for the most part. You don't just move your entire data operations to a third-party cloud. That's probably a signal of something happening there that's different than has been happening in the industry for the last 20 years, in that they may be saying, you know, there's some uncertainty here about, you know, our investment in buying our own stuff. And maybe it could be that, but what I sort of perceive in it is the technology that's going to be powering AI could change very, very rapidly, right? Today, it's all NVIDIA chips, but maybe tomorrow it's somebody else's chips that could change very rapidly. And therefore, investing all of your money and you need to hold those chips for at least, you know, 3, 5, 7 years, depending on what type of chip you're invested in, that there's uncertainty there. And so it makes it better to go with a cloud provider and offload that risk that there's a revolution in who's providing the best chips. Something like that could be going on. So there may be some interesting things to exploit there.
I mean, they spent billions of dollars laying their own proprietary fiber. If you read Michael Lewis's book, The Flash Boys, they spent billions of dollars running it to get that tenth of a second advantage. Maybe AI will give additional advantages, but take away that the timing advantage.
You have to hold your mind open to those possibilities right now because, you know, you're in a nascent industry, generative AI. AI itself is not a nascent industry, but generative AI is. And I think what we'll call looking back in time, we'll call the AI revolution is nascent right now. And when you're in a nascent industry, there's always a lot of flux at the beginning. A lot of things can change quickly.
Yeah, that's for certain. All right. Well, hey, we really appreciate your coming on, David, sharing your experience and your wisdom with us here. People want to find out more about what you're doing, connect with you on the web. How do you do that?
Oh, sure. Please, you know, visit our website. I regularly blog on the website and talk about these kinds of issues in a more lengthy sense. As well as there's lots of things to see about what we do and what we offer in terms of investment products. And you can visit us at markinfunds.com. That's MARKINFUNDS.com. And once again, I'm David Maurer of Markin Asset Management.
All right, great. And the link is in the show notes to this interview on financialsurvivalnetwork.com. Make sure you go there, sign up for your free newsletter, then click that link. You get right to David's site. David, appreciate you coming on. We'll definitely have you back on as these things develop and unfold and the impact of the revolution that's taking place now really becomes apparent to everybody. And maybe you can give us a little leg up on it. We appreciate you coming on.
Thanks so much, Carrie, for having me.
Thanks for listening to Carrie Lutz's Financial Survival Network, your solution to today's trying times. For the latest, go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com. Financial Survival Network, now more than ever.